I want to open with two quotations, and the first comes from something called the Communique from an Absent Future, which was written by students at the University of California last year when they began a campaign of widespread protest and occupation that was both in response to the government cutting funding from universities, but also to their own universities' complacency and enthusiastic support of these various programs of corporatization and privatization. So the quote is this: "The university has no history of its own. Its history is the history of capital. Though not a proper corporation that can be bought and sold, that pays revenue to its investors, the public university nonetheless carries out this function as efficiently as possible by approximating ever more closely the corporate form of its bedfellows." The second quote comes from my cousin, who's a hedge fund banker in New York City. And when I introduced him... And when I introduced him to a friend of mine who was a student at NYU, he laughed at her and said, "NYU's not a university. It's a hedge fund in drag as a university." At the time, I remember laughing and thinking how happy I was that I was part of a public university and not a hedge fund in drag. But now I'm not so sure. And while I don't think I'm quite yet willing to call Canada's university system a hedge fund, it's not public either. And I think the way I'm viewing it right now is kind of like someone's hypothetical asshole uncle who got laid off from a mediocre public service job in some financial meltdown or other and is now trying to become an unscrupulous real estate developer after reading a how-to or self-help book. So some of you here I know have heard me talk about SFU and about the university in general, about its relationship to the Olympics, about the attacks on the university by the government through cuts and privatization, and about the weapon itself as a weapon, sorry, the university itself as a weapon of gentrification and corporatization. So I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself. I hope it has new resonance since Goldcorp has come. But really, I just want to focus in on make one point, which is to say that in all of our conversations around the university and public services more generally, when we discuss whether it should be whether we discuss the battle between public and private, is I think we need to emphasize our choice is not between a government or a corporation running our university, but between a public university or a university run by a corporate government. Which is to say that right now we have a government which is actively corporatizing and privatizing our universities and public services. So the way things are working now, privatization does not mean that the government cedes control of a university to corporations. It means that the government actively works to make the university a more effective corporation. And the way they do this is, I think there's kind of two main ways. So first is not necessarily a cutting of university funding, but a total reorganization of where money goes. So in the last 10 years, tuition has more than doubled. In 2004, the provincial grants program, which gave students aid instead of loans, was cut quite substantially. Last year, the education budget was cut by over $70 million, and another $16 million was cut by financial aid. And according to one statistic, by 2011, the BC government will actually collect more money from tuition fee revenue than from corporate income taxes. But this is not simply an issue of the government cutting funds to the university. And in fact, one of the difficult things is on paper, it doesn't necessarily look like the governments are giving universities less money. And that's because the way the universities give money to the way governments give money to the universities has totally transferred. So it used to be that the government just gave the university a whole lot of money and then the university would decide how that money got spent. And hopefully that money would go to hiring teachers, to make keeping university costs low, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But now the government, most of its funding is targeted, which means the government gives the university money and tells them where that money has to go. So where is this money going? Mostly two places. First, creating new faculties and departments that anticipate labor market needs. So all of a sudden we need nurses, and here's $20 million the university gets to build a building that will house a department that will then teach nurses. Of course, there's no money to run this program, but they get to build buildings, and it looks like they're funding public education. Now, I think here's where it gets interesting, and here's why we see that there's no contradiction between the increased privatization of the university and the increasing role of the government in the university. So at the same time that the government is cutting funds to education, Woodward's was being developed and desperately seeking corporations and groups willing to take the risk and set up shop on the downtown east side. The first non-housing groups to agree to participate in this redevelopment were London Drugs and Simon Fraser University. So where does a university get the money for this project when they have none? Well, the government finds $50.3 million to give SFU to then set up shop down here. So I don't know for sure how this deal comes about, but it seems worth mentioning that at the same time, the chancellor of SFU was Brant Louie, who was also the CEO of London Drugs and a major donor to the Liberal government. Right? So we see exactly how governments, corporations, and the university are not, it's not a fight between public and private. It's a very active collaboration between the government and corporate structure. So while the government gives $50.3 million to redevelopment, it continues to withdraw core funding to the universities. So by investing in university infrastructure, which is the word they always use for building buildings or real estate development, the government is able to maintain the illusion of funding universities while funneling money into development projects and to entrepreneurs who often back them, and then turning the university into a weapon of dispossession, gentrification, and urban transformation. And this doesn't just happen here in Vancouver. This is exactly what has happened in Harlem with Columbia University, in the communities around Yale today in New Haven. And I think this is also, I think this kind of way of taking out money that you actually give to public programs and instead giving targeted money, which is then used for these kind of corporate ends, is exactly what how corporations have started to work. So one example is that corporations have to pay way less taxes now than they used to 30 years ago. So instead of corporations having to pay taxes, which then the public decides where all that money goes, hopefully to healthcare, to welfare, to public services, instead corporations then get to donate money where they see fit. And then the best part is they get to write that off as tax reductions, right, as tax deductions. So Goldcorp gets its name on a building, it gets free advertisement, and then we pay for Goldcorp's donation through its tax deductions. More recently, Brant Louie, the CEO of London Drugs, and our chancellor has stepped down, and just last week we learned who our new chancellor was going to be. Her name is Carol James. Carol Taylor. I do that all the time. So I don't know how many of you, clearly a lot of you know who Carol Taylor is, but she was the one who in 2005, found $1 billion to give out as signing bonuses for all the workers whose union signed contracts that extended their contracts to after the Olympics. So this $1 billion effectively brought labor silence and complicity during the Olympics and has now allowed the government to plead poverty when all of those contracts are up. So this is, I think, what I mean when I talk about it's never about cuts, but about reshuffling of funds, and it's never about public versus private, but rather government and corporations working really closely. And I think what's really important is what's the first thing Carol Taylor says as to why she was excited to be chancellor, and it's because she really, really wants to open up debates around healthcare and privatization. That's what she thinks she can accomplish as chancellor. Taylor, it's also worth noting, is on the board of TD Canada Trust and Bell Canada. This movement from the CEO of London Drugs to the ex-finance minister of Campbell's government is not a break. It's the same thing. And this is why that, as outrageous as it is that the contemporary arts space is named after Goldcorp, it's also horrifically not new. And the only new thing is it's exciting to see people get angry about it and start to mobilize. I guess what I just really want to emphasize really depressingly is the entire structure of the university is a corporate structure. Here are two members of the Board of Governors right now. Robert Elton is the CEO of BC Hydro. He's worked for PricewaterhouseCoopers and also for Eldorado Gold Corporation, a corporation notorious for helping China colonize Tibet through economic means, i.e. mining. Another board of governors is Anne Giardini, who is the president of Weyerhaeuser, a forestry company who've been logging the First Nations land of Grassy Narrows, where there's currently an 8-year blockade going on. And I think it's really clear we emphasize that these are the people who are running our university, so what else could we expect from them? I think it's no wonder then that recently the Board of Governors wrote a letter to the provincial government asking not for more money to fund public education, but for them to lift tuition caps so SFU can raise tuition to whatever it wants. This kind of attitude is reflected in the university at every level, in the way university is cutting faculty positions, in the way they're outsourcing jobs to private colleges and to contract faculty, the way they treat contingent workers. The university is run like a corporation, and students, TAs, contract teachers, the people who clean our halls and prepare our foods are the workers who are producing capital for them. Finally, before this talk, I went for a walk through Harbor Center, and here are what the rooms are named. RBC Dominion Securities Executive Meeting Room, Paperboard Industries Language Lab, West Timber Conference Room, Solder Industries Policy Room, Fletcher Challenge Canada Theatre, Royal Bank Computer Centre, Terrassen Cinema, Labatt Hall, Canfor Policy Room, Canadian Pacific Lecture Room, Barrigold Lecture Room. We have tar sands, we have mines, we have every resource extraction company possible is the names of these buildings. These are the names of the university. These are corporate-lined halls in a corporate-run university in a corporate-run state. The transformation of the university into a tool of gentrification and displacement and the acceptance of money from human rights violators like Goldcorp and also like RBC and Barrick are all part of the same problem. So while I think we definitely need to demand that the government funds our universities so that we don't need to take more money from private investors, while we also need to demand that money be given as a block and not with conditions attached to it, this is clearly not nearly enough. The history of the university is the history of capitalism, and this is why it is so important that we continually link struggles for public education to struggles against gentrification, to struggles against global injustices, and to struggles for Indigenous self-determination. As long as our board of governors are run by CEOs of companies that violate human rights, we do not have public education. As long as our halls are named for those companies, we do not have public education. And as long as our universities remain tools of labor market needs and weapons of gentrification, we do not have public education. It is only if the university becomes a democratic institution run and operated by the communities it serves that we can even begin to speak of being part of a public university. The struggle for public education is an important and radical one, but only if we conceive of the public in its real sense. Thank you.